Hello, and welcome to Spartan Spirit Leadership, where we take a close look at your leaders and just how well they're looking after Western society's best interests. I'm your host, Bill Kouralakis. I'm a retired senior Air Force officer, and today we're going to look at what Christopher Wray had to say about cyber warfare. And if you don't know who Christopher Wray is, he's the director of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, or FBI for short. As always, my aim is to focus on Western values of democracy, individual rights, and most of all, a nation-first perspective, because they are the foundation of Western societies, and I think they're worth fighting for. As we listen to recent media coverage about the Gaza conflict, the Russian-Ukrainian war, and potential conflict with China, it's sometimes easy to overlook what some would say is an unspoken war, that is to say, the war that's raging in cyberspace. Today I'm going to spell out just what is meant by cyberspace, cyber warfare, and what the risks are to Western nations, who is threatening the West with cyber warfare, and just what it means for you and your nation and your nation's leaders. We'll finish with some words from Chris Wray and a few other Western leaders. Right, let's start with the basics. So, what's cyberspace? Well, the term cyberspace has been attributed to a science fiction book called Neuromancer, written by William Gibson in 1984. It refers to the electronic medium by which people, computers, and organizations communicate. In today's world, that communication is done over computer networks that are created by a wide range of hardware, such as data exchanges, storage devices, servers, computers, satellites, antennas, cables, and even your phone. On that hardware exists software that defines the language spoken by these various devices, and it is via these languages that users share information, interact, swap ideas, play games, engage in discussions, conduct business, and remember, for some people, that business is crime or terrorism or even warfare. In summary, what we do on the internet and via electronic communication is all essentially cyberspace. The problem that we have in the modern world is that this cyberspace is vulnerable to interdiction by unscrupulous parties who want to disrupt normal interaction either for their own enjoyment, maybe for terrorism, crime such as stealing intellectual property or causing material or personal harm, or in the worst case, warfare. So let's look at the risks associated with cyberspace a little more closely. We'll start with what constitutes a cyber attack, what its effects might have, and then we'll consider who conducts such attacks. According to IBM, a cyber attack is any intentional effort to steal, expose, alter, disable, or destroy data, applications, or other assets through unauthorized access to a network, computer system, or digital device. And it can take many forms. Those forms include malware, which has subsets called viruses or worms, and there's also ransomware that infiltrates systems, compromises data, or disrupts the normal functioning of the network or program in cyberspace. It could also be the theft of data, usually by breaking through some security barrier, a password, or encrypted defense of some sort. A cyber attack might also involve taking control of a computer system, thus making it do something unintended by its rightful owner or operator. The proliferation of IT devices, so smart thermostats, cameras, wearables, etc., etc., all create a vast attack surface. Many of these devices lack robust security features, making them easy targets. A compromised smart home device may seem inconsequential to you, but it can serve as a gateway to more critical systems. Or, cyber attack could be some form of misinformation, such as the spread of disinformation, fake news, or propaganda, for example, to influence an election. Now let's consider what effects might come out of these sorts of cyber attacks. As I mentioned, it could be election interference, it could be industrial espionage, so stealing intellectual property or design secrets. So for example, if someone broke into Coca-Cola and stole the recipe for Coca-Cola, that would be considered a form of cyber attack. compromising systems or sabotaging critical processes, for example, rendering an electrical grid unusable. Imagine what would happen if a nuclear power plant's cooling system was disabled. It could kill thousands of people and destroy a nation's ability to generate electricity. And of course, that electricity is used to run critical systems and organizations, such as hospitals. A cyber attack could also disable software updates or cause a hardware component to malfunction, rendering some sort of system unusable or erroneous. You might find a cyber attack targeting someone's identity, in other words, stealing their identity. It could be financial fraud. It could be privacy breaches. There could be blackmail involved. Perhaps the blackmail is intended to then elicit state secrets or intellectual property. Widespread internet outage could lead to malfunctioning of systems. Imagine what would happen at airports if the internet went down, or a GPS constellation, which would then disrupt navigation and logistics. And if you're a military weapons operator, say a fighter pilot, well, your GPS-guided bomb's going to be useless without the GPS constellation. When it comes to misinformation campaigns, they can sway public opinion, destabilize democracies, and undermine trust in institutions. Bottom line is, I could go on and on about what sorts of cyber attacks might just transpire. And it doesn't matter if it's a military command and control center or a civilian target, they're all damaging to our nations, and potentially catastrophically so, especially if they coincide with a coordinated military attack. And this is something that nation states really need to be focusing in on. So now let's look at who might perpetrate such activity and why they use cyber warfare. We'll start off with something simple, like insider threats. Insiders are employees or contractors or disgruntled individuals, and they can pose significant risks. Whether through negligence or malicious intent or accidental disclosure, insiders can leak a lot of sensitive information and potentially give cyber criminals and nation states engaged in cyber warfare an inside edge or a way into a system. Cyber criminals, we mentioned earlier, they can exploit data breaches, they can do identity theft, financial fraud, etc., etc. And one of the huge problems coming out of cyber criminal activity is ransomware. One of the common cyber criminal activities involving ransomware is where a computer is taken over and a ransom is demanded to release the computer. And finally, we have something like nation-state aggression. So state-sponsored cyber attacks could be against individuals, could be commercial interests, or it could be state-on-state. In fact, you have to ask yourself this question. If a state were to bomb an electrical substation, rendering it useless, would that be considered an act of war? Most of you would probably say yes. What if that same substation was rendered useless through a cyber attack? Is that also an act of war? And if you say no, why not? Because the effect is the same. So, for example, in 2015, a Russian cyber attack against the Ukraine power grid disrupted power to about 230,000 people for up to 6 hours. Now imagine if that was 60 hours in minus 30 Celsius and a whole bunch of people died because of the cold. That would then have been a deadly attack. Is that enough to constitute war? These sorts of questions are really important, and the understanding of these sorts of questions is limited in the modern world. And it's this latter element of cyber attacks that we're talking about today, state-on-state cyber attacks, and we're going to call this cyber warfare. So put another way, cyber warfare refers to the use of cyber attacks against an enemy state, causing an effect on existing warfare or disrupting vital computer systems, whether a state of war exists or not. And state-on-state attacks have various aims, such as espionage, sabotage, propaganda, manipulation, economic warfare, etc., or maybe even some physical impact on key personnel, security, or the armed forces. One of the things that we have to consider when we start talking about cyber attacks is, well, how do you know who's conducted the cyber attack? And this is called attribution challenge. And it's part of the cyber world. Determining the true source of a cyber attack is notoriously difficult. Sophisticated actors use proxies or false flags or obfuscate the techniques by which they are engaging in the internet and thus hide their identity. And if a nation mistakenly blames one group and acts on that accusation, well, that could spark a conflict in and of itself. So should there be some sort of governance that would establish the norms of behavior in cyberspace, even if it's in the conduct of cyber warfare, just as we have for chemical or biological weapons, because cyber weapons can be quite damaging? Then, if you do have governance like that, how do you set up deterrence mechanisms that can be enforced? These are difficult things to do, and there would need to be, therefore, clear consequences for violating the ban, but again, we go back to attribution, so it's really a difficult area. Given all of that, let's take a look now at the level of cyber warfare that exists today. And here are some simple stats. And take these stats with a grain of salt because they come from Hewlett-Packard, who was actually publishing them to sell security software. But here we go. So the targets of nation-state cyber attacks, remember, nation-state cyber attacks, are broken up as follows. They attack enterprises or commercial interests about 35% of the time. They attack cyber defense assets about a quarter of the time. Media and communications about 15% of the time. Government bodies about 10%, and critical infrastructure about 10% of the time. And in terms of just sheer numbers, well, there were over 100 serious attacks against Western nations in 2023, and these numbers have been rising year on year. And these attacks include things as attacking power grids or other critical infrastructure. And if you add in ransomware and the many other forms of cyber warfare, they can be measured in the thousands. It really depends what definition you put onto it. Which means we're in an active cyber war. But again, we go back to the attribution problem, and we're not really sure who's doing the attacking, although we can make some pretty good guesses at it, and we're pretty certain that it's involving Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. So if we're at war, in a cyber war, and if you accept that there's an inherent right to self-defense under the laws of war, how far should we take this conflict? And let's start with one of my favorite say-nothing-but-sounds-good bureaucrats, and that's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. At the November 2023 NATO Cyber Defense Conference, he said a few things that are worth noting in the context of cyber warfare. First one, the fact is that it's impossible to imagine any conflict without a cyber dimension today, and cyber attacks can be as damaging and as dangerous as kinetic attacks. And I totally agree with Stoltenberg on those points. He's dead right about that. He went on to highlight the general principles by which NATO prepares for cyber warfare, and he made these points. First, addressing the rise in strategic competition in cyberspace is critical. Secondly, better protecting people and networks is another important aspect of cyber warfare. And third, working more closely with the private sector. And his speech gave little in terms of concrete actions about these things, but he did note at least two aspects of cyber warfare. Firstly, Russia and China are active in cyber warfare. And secondly, NATO has agreed that a cyber attack is sufficient to trigger Article 5 of the NATO Treaty. And to remind you, Article 5 means that an attack on one NATO nation is an attack against all of NATO, which would then invoke the notion of collective self-defense. Yet, if you go and look at NATO's policy, their 2022 cyber strategy explicitly says, quote, in peacetime, NATO does not undertake cyber operations outside of the defensive space, and it is individual allies whose activities affect strategic cyber competition, end quote. Well, I'd say that's a pretty weak stance if you accept that we already have cyber attacks happening. And given what NATO has said about whether a cyber attack triggers Article 5, I would say if you take all of that as a package, NATO has its head in the sand on cyber warfare. And if you think I'm exaggerating about these cyber attacks, in August 2023, so not that long ago, Russian hackers disabled Poland's rail systems by gaining access to the system's railway frequencies, and they transmitted a malicious signal that halted train operations. Now, if Russia had bombed a train terminal, would that be considered an attack? If disabling the entire rail system is not an attack, what is it? Interesting question, isn't it? And you're never going to hear NATO call these cyber attacks an attack against NATO because it would invoke Article 5, and their history shows they don't want to do that. If you're a voter in a NATO country, you might ask yourself, what level of attack would you go to war over? How many people have to die in a cyber attack? Or is it sufficient for an attack to simply target, say, the electricity grid during winter, leading to death from exposure? Yes, that's a hypothetical scenario, but it's quite plausible. Would you go to war over that? Now let's look at a real-life example where cyber warfare was indeed responded to by kinetic force. In 2019, and then again in 2021, Hamas cyber attacks on Israel were detected and assessed to have targeted civilians, endangering their lives. Israel responded by bombing the buildings that were the source of the Hamas cyber warfare activity. Now, I don't know the scale of either the Hamas cyber warfare attack or whether the Israeli response was proportional or not, but it seems to me that such an attack is allowed under the laws of armed conflict, which I've covered in previous episodes. At the end of the day, every nation has a right to self-defense, and I would say that we need to include cyber warfare in this. Now, this perspective was backed by the United Kingdom's Secretary of State for Defense, Ben Wallace, who told members of British Parliament that his services had offensive cyber capability to strike back when Russia threatens the United Kingdom's cybersecurity. And he said, quote, "I was always told the best part of defense is offense," end quote. One wonders why he limited this to threats against cybersecurity. If you're attacked, what does it matter what's attacked? Of course, in a conflict, we can expect the tempo and degree of cyber warfare to escalate markedly. Now, according to Timo Koster, who was a former cyber ambassador of the Netherlands and former director of the Defense Policy and Capabilities Division at NATO, and he was speaking about a NATO response to a Russian attack, and he said in that context, quote, "States will try to use electronic warfare to disrupt the offensive where possible by targeting command and control systems and to disable critical infrastructure in Russia, not just to complicate Russia's operation, but also to give Russia one more problem to deal with," end quote. And of course, he's dead right. We need to be able to conduct offensive cyber warfare when the time comes. So, do you agree with the UK's Secretary of State for Defense, Ben Wallace, in that we should use offensive cyber warfare? And if you agree, at what point should Western nations engage in offensive cyber warfare? Do we have to wait for a physical attack, such as indicated by Timo Koster? Or should we be proactively attacking with our own cyber warfare mechanisms? In other words, to attack those who are attacking or preparing to attack Western nations using cyber warfare or physically, as Israel did to Hamas in 2019 and 2021. If you're unsure, let's consider some words from FBI Director Christopher Wray. For those unfamiliar with Chris Wray, he's an attorney who worked in the U.S. government in private practice and lawyering jobs until he was appointed as the director of the FBI in 2017, and that's a position he has held since then. He gave a speech at the Munich Security Conference in February 2024, which is only 2 months before this recording was made, and I'll present you with a few points from his speech here today. But if you have any doubts about the cyber warfare threat, I highly recommend you look up the full speech, and you can easily find it online. He talked primarily about cyber warfare versus criminal organizations, but the principles and discussion are equally applicable to military state-on-state cyber warfare. Here we go. These are quotes from Chris Wray. Quote, "The bad news is that while all of us have gotten better at working together to combat the cyber threat, our adversaries have also been improving exponentially, and the world has become more dangerous than ever," end quote. His second point, "The Chinese government has continued to attack the economic security, national security, and sovereignty of rule-of-law nations worldwide. The cyber threat posed by the Chinese government is massive, and China's hacking program is larger than that of every other major nation combined," end quote. That's pretty significant. He went on to say, quote, "China's cyber threat is made even more harmful by the way the Chinese government combines cyber means with traditional espionage and economic espionage, foreign malign influence, election interference, and transnational repression. In other words, China is throwing its whole government at undermining the security of the rule of law world," end quote. And he particularly noted that any country not towing the line might consider things such as how free-thinking students in their countries from China are having their parents and grandparents harassed back in China, or perhaps that many of the companies in your nation are being harassed and hacked by a web of Chinese proxies, or perhaps that Chinese hackers are lurking in your power stations, your phone companies, poised to take them down when it suits the Chinese government's needs. And he went on to say that China's increasing number of offensive weapons within Western critical infrastructure is poised to attack whenever Beijing decides the time is right. He followed this up with, quote, Russia, Iran, and North Korea are also determined to use cyber means to take aim at things we all hold sacred, our freedoms, prosperity, and democratic norms, end quote. And he also noted that the FBI is taking offensive action to deter cyber warfare. And he pushed this point by saying, quote, the bad guys aren't constrained by international borders, so we shouldn't be either. And then he concluded with, quote, we can make joint use of our collective expertise, capabilities, and authorities, and we should remember and capitalize on what sets us apart from our adversaries, our mutual trust, and our shared values, end quote. Now, I like the way Chris Ray is thinking, and I like his proactivity. Cyber warfare is here, now, and we should be countering or deterring cyber attacks by going on the offense. If we don't defend the West from authoritarian attacks of any sort, then Western leaders are abrogating their responsibility to their citizens, in other words, to you. And I think Chris Ray's last point is critical. We in the West must remember what sets us apart from authoritarian regimes and criminal organizations that employ cyber warfare. We in the West value individual rights, and we need to protect those rights. And we value democratic principles and a rules-based order, and we need to protect those things. That rules-based order is under attack by cyber warfare every day. And if you fast forward to a time of conflict, you should expect a full-scale cyber attack. And it behooves Western leaders to pay attention to people like Chris Ray, who are active in that combat, albeit cyber combat. And I think NATO, the US, and US allies, such as Australia, should be taking a far more proactive approach when responding to or deterring cyber warfare. It's time to fight fire with fire. I'll summarize today's episode with some words from Andrew Hastie. Now, he's an ex-Special Forces soldier who became a member of Parliament in Australia. And he put it succinctly when he said, quote, cyber is the new battlefield. And whether you like it or not, if you own a smartphone or a tablet and you're connected, then you are on the battlefield and a potential target. What I'm worried about is a cyber Pearl Harbor, an online attack that cripples our critical infrastructure and catches us all by surprise. This isn't a science fiction script. This is now the reality of our world. So the challenge for us now is to preserve our personal security, but also our digital sovereignty as a country, end quote. Andrew was on target with his words, as was Chris Ray. Cyber warriors are now frontline troops, and cyber considerations are central to national policy. So ask yourself these questions. Do you accept that you're in a cyber war? Do you accept that there is the very real possibility of a cyber Pearl Harbor? Those of you with your head in the sand, I wish you well. For those of you who can see the threat, are you supporting the leaders in your nation who are espousing the need for cyber warfare and cybersecurity? Or at the very least, are you doing your part to make your personal and business IT systems secure? In other words, reset all your passwords to at least 14 or 15 characters. That would be a good start. Well, that's a wrap for today. This is a pretty serious subject that doesn't get anywhere near enough attention in the media. I hope you do something about it. And I hope you enjoyed this discussion and that you're a bit more informed now about the silent war that's actually raging all around you right here, right now. If you enjoyed the podcast, please tell a friend and give the podcast a rating. Thanks for listening.